Good morning. How are you? Welcome to breakfast. Well, from today, in England and Wales, people who force their children to marry will face up to 7 years in jail. An estimated 8,000 young women are coerced into these kind of marriages each year. Now, there are many victims out there. Some we hear from, some obviously we don't. Have a listen to this. It's a victim in Blackburn who was engaged at the age of 14 to her cousin. When she refused to get married, her father put a gun to her head.
We did have a good upbringing, but when I got to 14, it's already said to give the word. When I was born, they're like, she's going to be our daughter-in-law. And that's it. My dad's like, yeah, fine, that's all right with me. That's all it took, really. And then after 14 years, I finally find out that I'm getting engaged to somebody like who I've always seen as brother. It's disgusting. I don't know. You know, somebody you grew up with, your brother, and, you know, you're marrying him. And obviously, they expect you to marry him, have kids with him and whatnot. And you just think, oh, no way. In our family, like I said, the kids don't get an option. So whether you like something or not, you've got to do it because they're older than you and they're telling you to do it. So I remember December 12, 2007. I'll never forget the dates. And when I got to the airport, my paralysed uncle, so-called paralysed anyway, was driving, you know, to the airport. And I was like, right, that's it. You know, I'm in a mess. I knew it. Do you know when you just click to something, you think, I've got this big house in Pakistan. Do you know, the windows? I remember them doing all this. They put metal bars in it so I can't get out. This place is a jail for me. That's what they were trying to make. And then a week later, my dad arrived with, like, my cousins, with a load of luggage. And you just think, right, that, do you know, that's some wedding plan, definitely. They're not going to come on holiday with all them, not for the start, all the kids. So I was like, okay. You know, when my sister got in the car, the way she said it, you know, you're in trouble. When we got home, I remember reading, and before she could tell me what's going to happen, or I'm getting married, or, you know, give me the news, or ready for your wedding, my dad goes, oh, I need a word with you, let's go upstairs. So my dad's like, you're getting married? I'm like, okay, you know, you try and take it. Who to? The same guy. I was like, no, I'm not. You promised me I'm not. Why are you lying to me? Why did he lie to me? No, you're getting married to him, and there's no way am I taking no for an answer. That's what he goes to me. The whole village respects us, and there's no way am I going to let this respect go because of you. I got my brothers and sisters, kids married off. I still remember him saying this to me. They didn't have no objection. They couldn't say no to me. My own kids can't say no to me. You're no different to them. If they all had to do it, you're going to do it. Like, I'm not going to marry him. I'm not going to marry him. I don't care. Get me. And I remember saying to him, get me married to anybody else from here, from Pakistan, I'll marry him, but I'm not marrying him. So my dad walked out of the room, walked back in with a gun in his hand. I'm going to kill you. If you don't agree to it, I'm going to kill you. I remember I started crying. I'm like, no, you can kill me. I'm not going to marry him. You can shoot me. I'm not going to marry him. He had the gun in his hand, and my uncle took him out of the room, and he's like, no, don't. He come back in and goes, he'll kill you. If you don't agree to the wedding, he'll kill you. It was 4 o'clock in the daytime, and he sat down with me. He's like, do you know what that is? I was like, yeah, it's a British passport. He's like, if you don't marry him, you can't go back to England. We burn your passport, you can't prove it, you're British. Like, you know, you think about it, I'm not going to be allowed to go back to England. You think, no way am I staying in Pakistan for the rest of my life.
One of the many victims in Lancashire. She did end up marrying her cousin. But after a couple of months, she escaped from Pakistan, returned back to the UK, where she got help and support. Well, now, the new law follows decades of campaigning to actually make this a criminal offence, forced marriage. But some fear it could actually deter victims from coming forward. Let's find out exactly what this means. Rachel Horman is a solicitor and head of the Domestic Violence and Forced Marriage Department at Watson and Ramsbottom Solicitors in Great Harwood. She joins me in the studio this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
What does this mean? What does the change in law today mean?
There are two specific criminal offences which come into force today. Mm. One makes forced marriage in itself a criminal offence. And as at yesterday, it wasn't. So that specific issue wasn't covered by the law. There are laws which have been used for some time to deal with it, such as kidnap and assault, threats to kill. But the actual offence of forced marriage was not a criminal offence until today. The second offence is breach of a forced marriage protection order, which is like a civil injunction, which have been available in the courts since 2008. But breach of one of those orders wasn't a criminal offence until today, and now obviously it is.
So what is the difference between a forced marriage and an arranged marriage? Because some people get confused by this, don't
you? Yeah, there is a big difference, and obviously an important difference, because one is criminal and one isn't. A forced marriage is where one or both people do not consent to the marriage and pressure or abuse is used.
OK, a lot of awareness has been raised. Why do you think, and we heard from the Assistant Commissioner for Lancashire, why do you think that people, the victims of this, might be actually put off going to the police and saying, I am being forced into a forced marriage?
Well, I'm sure nobody wants to criminalise their family members. Nobody wants to think that their family members would go to prison. But by the same token, nobody wants to think that their family member would put a gun to their head, would force them into a marriage, would kidnap them, trick them into going abroad on a holiday, remove their passport and then say, well, if you don't marry this person, you're not coming home. And that's a story that I hear probably on a weekly basis in Lancashire.
A weekly basis?
Yeah, I see forced marriage victims every week.
Every single week.
Yeah.
And these are young girls from Lancashire.
Not just girls either. I do see boys occasionally as well. I think that's a hidden issue, that sometimes young boys are also forced into marriages as well.
And you see about one a week?
At least one a week, yeah.
Wow.
Either somebody who's already been forced into the marriage or somebody who's worried about being forced into a marriage. And I think that the publicity surrounding the criminalisation will make a big difference and will mean that these young people, mainly young people, know that they can get help, and also that the parents know that it's now illegal to do it. So I think it will make a difference.
And imagine, you know, if you're a 14, 15-year-old girl or boy...
Yeah.
And you're told this has got to happen.
Yeah.
At that age in your life, you more or less have to say goodbye to your family, have you?
You do. And not
That's
just
massive.
Not just your family, but your school friends, the whole community, because it's generally not safe for that person to stay within the community. So they lose everything. I mean, it's far more serious than a normal domestic violence situation.
Yeah. Do you think, though, that just because now this is a criminal offence... that it will make a difference to some mums and dads out there who quite clearly don't give a monkeys about the law?
I think it will, because I think the discussion that surrounds it will be the thing that does it. And maybe we need one or two high-profile prosecutions to get that message across that it is illegal. And not just conduct in this country. The law has been drafted in such a way that it would make conduct abroad a criminal offence in this country as well.
Thank you for joining us. Really interesting. So, one a week?
At least, yeah.
Rachel, thank you for joining us this morning. Rachel.
Thanks, Graham. Good morning. Lancashire's Assistant Police and Crime Commissioner says she does not believe there's a need to criminalise forced marriages, as existing laws already offer protection. From today, both forced marriage and the breaching of a forced marriage protection order will become criminal offences. It means those convicted could face a prison sentence of up to 7 years. Saima Afzal says the new law may potentially stop victims from coming forward. Yet she welcomes the news that those who breached forced marriage protection orders would face prosecution.
In many ways, just per se criminalising forced marriages, we know is not going to change anything overnight. It may well actually have an adverse impact, because we know some communities have raised concerns that the minute they report something about their families, that they will now get locked up. And that's not true at all.
And we'll have more on forced marriage straight up.
The new law follows decades of campaigning to criminalise forced marriage, but some fear it could deter victims from actually coming forward. Well, Saima Afzal is Lancashire's Assistant Police Crime Commissioner. She's been campaigning for women's rights and herself has personal experience of this. Thanks for joining us on Breakfast this morning. What impact do you think this law will make?
To be honest, with the law and the changes, what I would say, in terms of, you know, police and partners prosecuting forced marriages and the things that we've just heard from our previous very brave young lady who's spoken out, we've been prosecuting, regardless of the change in law, as a police service, and you can see the case of Shafili Ahmed, Banaz Mahmood. So actually all those crimes that take place during the coercion of a forced marriage, such as kidnap, rape, potentially murder, we have...
laws in place that do allow us to prosecute. A piece of research was done in 2010 by Aisha Gill from Roehampton University, and 73 organisations, charitable organisations, were interviewed, and they all flagged up the concerns around the criminalisation, in not in respect that they don't want people to be prosecuted, right, but the respect in the respect of the fear that victims won't come forward because they don't want to automatically criminalise their parents or their family members. We want them to come forward early on, before it gets to a stage where you're prosecuting. So it's really a case of early intervention and a proactive approach, as opposed to having a reactive, sort of prosecutory approach, if you would.
So it sounds like you think that the law that's brought in today probably won't make a difference, or actually might make the problem worse.
Potentially. I mean, I'm not saying it will, it won't. As it stands, if you look at, if you take our force data for Lancashire, we have considerable number of honour-based violence. And what is honour-based violence? I don't particularly agree with necessarily with the definition. You know, we've had, since the Civil Protection Act of 2008 for forced marriages, we've had roughly, you know, 690 incidents reported. That's just to the police, of honour-based violence. That's not a huge amount, but what that has shown year on year, that people are confident coming forward early on. Because before you get to a forced marriage, a range of coercive behaviours have taken place. And they start from a very young age, particularly for women. For example, controlling who they go out with, what jobs they do, what they wear. There's a whole range of control that exists in any form of domestic violence, I should add. Mm. But in particularly in terms of, you know, forced marriage and honour-based violence.
You kind of did it just a little bit there, but let's just explain what honour-based violence is.
Okay.
Because there are a lot of people who are listening who cannot get their head around that a dad could put a gun to a 14-year-old girl's head and say, listen, you are marrying this fella. There's a lot of people who just can't get their head around that.
Absolutely, and that's criminal behaviour. That is beyond the coercive control. That's an act in itself that is not acceptable, and actually, if relevant and if appropriate, you should certainly, that kind of act, you should certainly be prosecuting. But we've got going back to honour-based violence, the difference between domestic violence, you've generally got a relationship, an intimate relationship with a partner, and it's within the context of the home. Honour-based violence is a broader definition used to describe the control that the community applies as well. So it's not just your immediate family, or even your immediate extended family, aunties and uncles. This is this is a set of communities who will look at you, particularly if you're a woman and you are not complying with those cultural norms, whatever they might be. And if you're not complying with them, so for example, if I walk down the street wearing a short skirt, it's not acceptable. Somebody will say something regardless of whether they're related to me or not. So there's this wider community control that's incredibly, these are the behaviours that are allowed to fester in some communities. And I might add, not just exclusively, you know, South Asian communities. You can go to parts of the world where I work in Grimsby, for example, and you will see white communities there where there is a patriarchal community, and you could actually describe honour-based violence there, where certain norms for women are not accepted. For example, they should be at home maybe making the tea. I'm not saying that's all of Grimsby, but no, just describing elements of that, which you could describe as honour-based violence.
But come on. They're always going to be male chauvinists who think, you know, that woman's work is in the kitchen and they should be making the tea, but they're not forced into marriage. They don't have guns put to their head, do they?
No, not necessarily, but if you look at different... What I'm still describing is, if you look at domestic violence and the number of domestic violence, and we know there's 2 million people who... That's both men and women, 1.2 million primarily women. So it's a massive issue. And with forced marriage and honour-based violence, we're identifying that and we're trying to capture that data, which is absolutely critical. I agree we should do that. What I'm also saying is, if you're waiting till something's happened and prosecuting, that's far too late. That's not good enough. I've been through it myself. And also, there's an assumption here that every single person who's forced into a marriage has got a gun held to the head. Actually, a lot of relationships, before they get to this extreme end, there are points you can intervene. For example, there are women that I've not in a formal capacity as a friend have gone in and they said, can you please speak to my mum, my dad? They want me to get married to somebody out of the culture. I know they don't really want it, but the community do. So in that regard, actually, the parents are sort of victims as well. Okay. They're facing a lot of pressure, so they need support, and you can support and stop it from happening.
You mentioned that you've gone through it yourself. Can you quickly tell me your story?
Well, to be honest, I mean, it happened a long time ago. There's no categorisation as we have it now as forced marriage. Clearly, it was something I didn't want. It's a relationship I didn't want. It was deemed as appropriate, not necessarily by my father. My father was a victim himself, where the pressures by the community were, why is your daughter working? This was, you know, 20 years ago. Why is she working? Why is she studying? Why is she in college? These behaviours weren't acceptable back then. And
where was this?
This was in Blackburn.
Right.
So okay. This is the community from Blackburn who is not related to us making these reports. So you are...
I can't understand that. I can't get my head around that. The community that your dad was involved with, and your dad felt so much under pressure, he forced his daughter into something. I just can't understand that.
This is where you've got to. If you grow up in a culture and you belong, it's a confusion of culture, religious identity, where the power dynamics lie. And in fact, actually, if you look at this, it's very complex behaviours to explain, because by default of birth, you are born into a certain culture. You are taught certain things, an ideology, which nobody challenges. And actually, statutory organisations for a long time never challenged that. And even now, they don't challenge those behaviours. It's actually easy to challenge a forced marriage. It's much, much harder to sit there and have that dialogue with some members of the community, and I must stress that put these pressures on actually a silent majority, and who feel that they must do certain things. They're doing
also,
it. But what I will need to add this.
Right.
My father, actually, when he saw what had happened, he did it for the right reasons, to protect me from this bad mouthing from the community.
Right.
What then happened was, when this man, and I call him this man, that's technically some would describe as my husband, I don't, because it was not a marriage of my choosing, when he was abusing me and dishonouring me, as my father described, my father took him out of the house and he sorted out the divorce. So actually, my father was a victim of pressure, of bullying. And if you can imagine that, going somewhere, constantly being bullied to behave in a certain way, and if nobody's supporting you, what happens? People acquiesce to the behaviours, especially when statutory bodies still talk to the wrong elders, wrong self-professed leaders. Sorry?
I want to ask one more question. It sounds like if these people, you put pressure like they put on your father, it sounds like that they won't care that the law's changed today.
Well, that's what the point I'm making. The law itself, that's the end result. That's an extreme end result, where guns are being held to women's head or even men's, you know, heads. And that we're describing extremes there. So the law in itself does nothing. We have always been prosecuting, and I say we, the police, the partners, we're doing training with practitioners, working with Lancashire County Council, East Lancashire Health Trust. All these agencies, we're working really closely together in Lancashire to have a proactive approach to tackle those very difficult behaviours. It's far more difficult to tackle, you know, patriarchal norms that you know, like you keep saying, you can't get your head around. It's very difficult. But when you live with them day in, day out, and nobody's challenging them, then clearly, you know, are we surprised when we see these behaviours manifesting in the extreme form? Well, and I'm not, because I live in those communities.
We'll have to leave it there, because I've taken up far too much time with you this morning.
It's a very complex area, we'll add, and it's 10 minutes, you know, 5 minutes to explain the complexity of it.
We'll have to leave it there, but thank you very much for joining us this morning. That's Saima Afzal, who is the Assistant Police and Crime Commissioner for Lancashire. It is a very complicated subject. We could have talked a heck of a lot.